10 years ago this morning, I was at home working on the computer. My wife was not at the house. She was working, and she called me, and she said, "A plane has just crashed into the World Trade Center. You should turn on the TV." And then she left. She hung up the phone. But I had a lot of stuff to do that day. I was a busy man. And while it did seem strange, it didn't seem like it was that strange. And so I went back doing my work. She called again about 15 or 20 minutes later, and she said, "Are you watching the news?" And I said, "No, I've got all this work to do." And I'll never forget what she said. "I think you better turn on the TV." And so I did. Do you remember where you were that day? Do you remember what you were doing? I suspect that most of you do. You remember almost like when Kennedy was shot, although I was way too young to remember that, what it was you were doing at the time that the planes came into the World Trade Center and crashed into the Pentagon and crashed into Pennsylvania. The LA Times did a blog a number of years ago trying to get people to remember what they were doing at the time they heard the news. And one lady, S. D'Amato from Connecticut, wrote this: "I was feeding my 4-year-old and my 2-year-old. Sesame Street was playing in the background on a television, and I was putting butter and syrup on waffles, working on my second cup of coffee, when my mom called, all upset, and said, 'Don't worry, your sister is okay. She worked in New York City.' I thought she was mugged or something. My mom was surprised that I didn't know what was going on. But PBS, well, they don't cut Sesame Street for announcements. I switched the channels and then called my husband after watching the footage of the Pentagon. I told him to come home. He was working in Connecticut. We watched in horror as the second plane hit. We were very numb. My 4-year-old thought it was a movie, and I was wishing it was too. We rounded up water and supplies and cash, and then I started calling friends until the cell lines were tied up. I heard ambulances running down I-95. I remembered all of my visits to the towers, having dinner at the windows, taking friends to sightsee. I am still in disbelief that an event like that could happen in my lifetime." Needless to say, for many of us, we quit work that day. It didn't seem really to matter anymore, did it? It seemed like deadlines and calendars and all the things that we had on our plate that day and maybe even that week were secondary as we all watched what was going on. We had so many questions. We wanted so many answers, like, who did this? And why did they do this? What will this do to the U.S. economy? Do you remember that? What will this do to the U.S. defense? Are more attacks coming? Are they imminent? Or how can we stop further attacks from hitting us? I remember thinking to myself, as I reflected on the events of the day, that our lives will never, ever be the same. And so that begged the question, what will be the new normal? Approximately 3,000 people died that day. And while that seems like a large number, when we look back at the history of the world or even the history of the United States, the history of the continent, 3,000 people really statistically isn't a lot. If you remember the tsunami from 2004, the Asian tsunami that crashed into that whole area, there were 230,000 people that died that day. In the United States alone, there are almost 12,000 or 13,000 people that die each year from just falling. There are 13,000 people that die each year from poison. Hurricane Katrina killed thousands. And yet, for some reason, the World Trade Center and the bombing, or the crashing of the airplanes into the World Trade Center and into the Pentagon and the planes that crashed into Pennsylvania, that whole entire terrorist attack still sears in our memory. And you will hear stories after stories today and probably this whole week, and you probably heard it, and you're probably sick and tired of 9/11 already about it. But it was something dramatic in our life. It was something we all remember. The question is, why? Why? To answer that question, I'd like to go into our gospel lesson today. Because Jesus was preaching to his crowd, to his people, and he was part of a nation that was really quite remarkable. The Roman Empire that Jesus was a part of, he had preached all throughout Galilee, but they were part of a larger system called the Roman Empire. And the Roman Empire at the time of Jesus was experiencing a time that historians still today call the Pax Romana. It was a piece of Rome. And it was a very, very brief period of time, very unusual in the ancient Near East, very unusual throughout the world. Well, there was a long period of time of peace. It started about 30 years before Jesus was born. And so by the time he was preaching and teaching all around Galilee, the Pax Romana had lasted for about 60 years, which means this: the people all around Jesus had never really known war. All they'd known was kind of this peace and the protection from Rome. It was quite an unusual thing to be living in Jesus' time, to be a part of that peace that existed. So it must have been very, very strange for Jesus to get up on that hill, the Sermon on the Mount, and to talk about a different kingdom. A different kingdom that's filled with peace. A different kingdom that's filled with love. They already thought they were part of a kingdom like that. But listen to what Jesus says. He says there's a different kingdom. And he says it's a kingdom where those who are mourning will be comforted. And those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, they'll be filled. And those who are in the midst of war, well, there will be peacemakers. And they'll be called the children of God. And the people who are persecuted for righteousness, they'll be called the children of God. And they will be part of this thing called the kingdom of heaven. Now, why in the world would Jesus come and talk about the kingdom of heaven to people who already think that they're living in a great place? And the answer is quite simple. Pax Romana was a myth. Even though there were legions stationed around the country protecting from invasion, and even though there were legions inside the country protecting internally, and even though these people thought they were living in a period of peace and prosperity because of the Roman Empire and because of the laws and the strength of their military and the economic wealth and the might and all that, there was still suffering. There was still pain. There was still robbery. Remember when Jesus talked about the Good Samaritan and he talked about the parable? That wasn't a foreign parable to them. People would walk from Jerusalem and they would get mugged and people were killed. And there was thievery and robbery. There was insurrection. There was a lot of stuff going on. They didn't really live in a very peaceful time. It was just that the peaceful time that they lived in was less dramatic and less horrible than other places around the country and other times. When we talk and we look back at the World Trade Center and the bombing, the fact is we perhaps were living in an illusion also. We thought that because of our economic might and because of who we were as the United States, that evil would not be able to come and interject itself into our society and do such horrible damage. But the fact is it was an illusion because we've always lived in a society where evil very, very easily can come in and do dramatic things. I think one of the lessons of 9/11 is how easy it is with today's modern technology, how easy it is with just a couple box cutters, people can come in and hijack planes and crash them and do all this unspeakable damage very, very easily. And I think it shook us to the core. That's what we saw on 9/11. We saw evil. We saw evil on a scale that I don't think we've seen before in the United States. Although, if we think about it, it's always been there. Think about Columbine. Think about the Oklahoma Trade Center building burning up. The fact is, as long as we live in this earth, there will always be evil. But Jesus talks about another kingdom full of joy, another kingdom full of peace, another kingdom where evil does not come and be a part of that kingdom. Evil is shut out of the door, and only the righteous enter that kingdom, and that is the kingdom of heaven. And that kingdom is open to all of us. and you say, how can I get into that kingdom? How can I go to a place where there's no mourning? How can I go to a place where there's merciful people who are shown mercy, where the pure in heart will see God, where there's peacemakers? How do I get into that kingdom? And Jesus says quite simply in verse 3, how to get there. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. You can't get into this kingdom through economic might. You can't get into this kingdom through power. You can't get into this kingdom through strength. All the things that we value do not get you into that kingdom. The only way to get into that kingdom is to talk to the king and say, I can't on my own get there. And to come to the doors of the kingdom and lay everything that you are out behind you and to humbly kneel before the king of all creation and say, I can't do it, but I know that you can let me in. And so the king lets you into the kingdom, not because of anything that you've done, but because the king sent his son to this earth to redeem us so that we would be able to come into the kingdom of heaven. That's what Jesus did. When he came and spoke all around Galilee, when he taught the people, what he told us is that all the wealth, all the grandeur, all the power, none of that matters. The only thing that matters is humility. Peace, righteousness, mercy. Those are the things that matter, and those are the true strengths of the kingdom. The terrorists and evil, they don't understand that. They think that the only way to win in this world is to subject everybody to their power and to their evil and through strength. But the fact is that Jesus came in complete poverty, lived a life completely devoid of any wealth or any fame, and yet he conquered evil by dying on the cross and rising again for us. Evil never understands that. The evil that came and penetrated our country on 9/11 thought that they could bring us down. They thought that they could attack our military structures. They could attack our economic structures. They could come and bring us down. And they thought that they would win. But they didn't, did they? Because you'll never win through economic power or through military might. You win by laying down your life for others. As some of the stories started coming out of 9/11, it was amazing to hear them. Stories like Wells Crowther, a 24-year-old equities trader who was in the World Trade Center, and he helped dozens of people to safely come out of the South Tower before he himself died in the tower's collapse. Or construction manager Frank DeMartini, and construction inspector Pablo Ortiz, who also saved 77 people on the 88th floor of the North Tower. Or there were the 40 passengers and crew aboard Flight 93, which crashed into Shanksville, Pennsylvania. According to the 9/11 Commission, the four terrorists who had hijacked the plane likely wanted to crash the plane into the White House. But these brave people downed the jet in Pennsylvania Field. That's the true strength of our nation. The true strength of the United States is not our economic power or our wealth or anything. What we found out on that day, that the strength of our nation is the people within it. Because you'll never find strength in power. As Jesus says on the Sermon on the Mount, the strength, the true strength, comes in weakness, in peace, in mercy. Those are the strength that Jesus brought to each and every one of us as we enter into the kingdom of heaven, a kingdom that will never fade. In Jesus' name, amen.